cold.
Okay.
So the production of my nasals will not be
at
its best.
Yes, just leave it there, please.
I can hardly breathe. All right, so the word that I've got is goat.
Okay.
Right, so first I'll give an overview of the word, and it is composed of a velar plosive, then of a diphthong, a back closing diphthong, and finally another plosive, an alveolar plosive. Alright, so what I'll start is I'll start with the first sound, but as the last sound is also plosive, there will be a lot of things that are in common, so I'll kind of establish like a parallel there. So as not to repeat all things twice.
Good.
So plosives are categorized as stops. That means that they are produced with total closure at some point in the oral cavity. In this case, the closure is bilic. So we have the closure is produced between the back of the tongue and the soft palate. That can also be, in that sense, categorized as obstruents opposed to sonorants, in the sense that there is an impediment on the airflow. And they can also be categorized between contoids. Because, I mean, if you think about glossoids, there are all sounds which are central, which excludes the lateral, which are oral, which excludes nasals, and most importantly, in terms of resonance, that they are frictionless. So sounds like plosives, which are produced with total closure, are contoids. So are fricatives, which are produced with narrowing. And when you think about plosives, you can establish a parallel with nasals in terms of the places of articulation that they occur at. So for the velar plosive, it occurs kind of parallel to the velar nasal, the only difference being the position of the soft palate. For plosives, which are oral, the soft palate is raised, meaning that the air will go through the oral cavity, and for nasals, it would be lowered, meaning that the air will be allowed to escape through the nasal cavity. Same occurs with the alveolar plosive, but it being parallel to the alveolar nasal. And when we describe the production of plosives, we also have to describe as three stages that they are generated with. First, the closing stage, which is the stage in which the articulators come together to form that closure. Then the hold stage, which is the moment when the articulators are together and the air is restrained behind that closure. And then finally, the release stage, in which the organs come apart and the air is released explosively. That's like one of the most important characteristics of plosives. And then I will start talking about allophonic variants. Our plosives are very interesting in the fact that they are that many. I mean, all kinds of things occur, really. And in this sound, in this particular context, there is not much going on. The only thing we could maybe possibly consider is if we were starting with this word in an utterance, as it is preceded by a silence, it would be devoiced. But then there are many others, for example, gemination, which occurs when you have two homorganic plosives together. What occurs is that there has not to be a second closure, so you have a longer medial phase, which could be the, in examples such as take great care, but it's also present for the alveolar plosive. I have another example, like had to, with its voiced pair. And there can also be release masking, which occurs when you have two non-homorganic plosives together. So the second onset masks the release of the first, such as in great gear. It is also present in the alveolar, for example, in take time. Then you can also have lateral release, which can also be present with the alveolar, and some authors even argue that proper lateral release only happens with the alveolar plosives, for they share the same place of articulation as the lateral in the alveolar sense. And those authors consider when you have where, be it the velar or the bilabial plosives, they consider it to just be lateral escape. Mm-hmm. And they can also all be considered lateral release as well. You can also have, in both cases, labialization, which occurs when it's a change in place of articulation by the effect of any of the sounds which have lip rounding. Here I have the goose vowel, for the example, with the velar, such as in goo, a very easy example, but very simplified. And but also, for example, with the labiovelar proximant, which is produced with lip rounding, such as in twin. And then one process which is not shared is similitude, because similitude only affects velar plosives. Sorry. And similitudes can be kind of like exemplified in two ways. One is fronting, when the velar is followed by the way any front vowel, or by back vowels, as in retraction. So I chose like gets and gots to have like similar examples. Then I have way, like, I think many more examples for the alveolar, some that don't affect the velar, since they are not shared, are aspiration and aspiration, because this only affects voiceless plosives initial in a stressed syllable, such as in time, if we were to start that. But they, at the same time, they can be unaspirated, in this case, by the effect of the fricative that is preceding them, such as in stare.
Good.
I've already, I think I've mentioned, I have more. I have nasal release. I also have an example which is happening in within the word and not across word boundaries, which were most of what I've mentioned, such as in cotton. In that case, you would also have the vocalic nasal. And then omission of the onset, which is kind of like, so if in nasal release, we need the plosive being followed by its homorganic nasal. But in omission of the onset, we need to have it preceded by its homorganic nasal.
Good.
I don't think I've mentioned all of them. Yes. Well, now moving to the nucleus of this word, which would be the diphthong, goat, the goat diphthong, which ironically is the reference word that it's used.
Yes.
So when you think about goats, I was going to say, we think about diphthong. We think of oral sounds, which are complex in the sense that they are composed of two sounds, which produce a glide between the first and the second one, and so they are categorized in terms of the distance of the glide, the direction, and the prominence. But anyway, the prominence in English is always falling, as in the we don't have racing diphthongs in English, whereas we could in Spanish.
Yeah.
So I mean that's kind of omitted because they are all falling. In terms of distance of the glide, diphthongs can be narrow or wide when you have a longer distance in the glide. And then you can have them be centering, like the square diphthong or the pure diphthong that speaks longer go into the direction of the schwa. And then you have closing diphthongs, which are separating whether they are fronting or backing. Fronting, like, could be the face diphthong. And then in this case, like the one we have, back diphthongs that moved into the direction of the foot vowel. And when we think about diphthongs, there are a few allophonic variants, or we have lesser than plosives. But in these particular words, in this context, we can mention prefortis plicae clipping as being present. And this occurs, I mean, kind of is a giveaway in the name, but it occurs when you have either a vowel or a diphthong followed by a voiceless consonant in the same syllable. If it were different, it wouldn't be clipped, shortened. I mean, it only affects long vowels and diphthongs because they have the same length, and so they can be clipped. And then other processes that can affect diphthongs, and obviously vowels as well, is nasalization. The way that they are affected is by the presence of a nasal, the preceding that being initially nasalized, followed that being finally nasalized, or surrounded that being totally nasalized. And what happens is that the soft palate either in anticipation or continuation begins to lower, or it doesn't get to raise at all for the production of the oral sound, and so the orals are produced nasally. And then one process which is exclusive of diphthongs is smoothing, that because when you have diphthong plus schwa, mm-hmm. like for example in fire, the second element of the diphthong can be lost and just be fire, mm-hmm. or it can be going a step further in monophthongization and just turn into a long vowel as a fa.
Mm-hmm.
And then in terms of connected speech, the diphthongs play a role in vocalic juncture with the labiobiliary glide, because mm-hmm. I mean when you have either the goat vowel, the mouth vowel, or the goose, I mean goat diphthong and mouth diphthong, or the goose vowel plus another schwa, these can be linked by a word glide such as in go away.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that I forgot to mention, that I just remember because I saw that, when we think about the cardinal chart to illustrate how vowel sounds and diphthongs are produced, they use, because if you think about it, I mean using a head diagram obviously wouldn't show much, because there is no contact with the articulation, there is barely an open approximation, and so with the chart devised by Daniel Jones we can really see the movements of the tongue in terms of which part of the tongue articulates and how high it raises towards the soft palate. But obviously, once you go about that, it's a consonant. I think that's all I have to
read. All right. Now, in terms of, you mentioned some processes, yes, at the level of connected speech. If you were to think about processes that may affect not these words, but words and messages in connected speech, which ones can you name, Eugenia?
You mean like other
processes? I mean, if you were in the world of connected speech, which are the processes that you can name?
I completely forgot about that.
Why?
Because I had it prepared, I left that sheet there. Yes, because I completely forgot to mention process of connected speech that affect the velar plosive and the alveolar. So I can
But you can take that, but as the general question, in terms of connected speech phenomena, which are the ones that occur in the English phonological system?
Assimilation is one of the most mm-hmm. important,
mm-hmm.
but we also have linking mm-hmm. and elision.
Mm-hmm.
And with linking, I was able to give examples just of the one type of vocalic juncture, but we can also have linking R and mm-hmm. intrusive R. And that has to do with the types of languages. Some are rhotic and some are non-rhotic. English, the general British, being a non-rhotic accent in the sense that R in final spelling is not always produced mm-hmm. unless the following word starts in a vowel, mm-hmm. in which case it is produced. But other accents like the American, the R is always produced. But then there's another phenomenon when there is no R in spelling, there is still an R produced. So, for example, in the word drawing, that's mm-hmm. one possible way of pronouncing it, but you cannot say drawing.
Mm-hmm.
You like insert that intrusive R there.
Yep.
And then the other kind of vocalic juncture is the yod glide.
Mm-hmm.
In like, if you have, like for example, diphthongs that move into the direction of the kid vowel,
mm-hmm.
There is a joining by yod, like I'm playing an example, like may I,
mm-hmm.
may I, so may I. And then in terms...
And what is neutralization?
Neutralization is a process that affects certain vowels when they are in a final position in stress. So for example, the kid vowel can be neutralized into, you say, me. In that mm-hmm. case, it would be neutralized. The schwa is also a neutral vowel.
And what about weak forms? Wouldn't you place them within neutralization?
Interesting question. I mean, yes, in the sense that they always take a neutralized form. Also, mm-hmm. I got an example, but there are many. Like the
just
to name one.
What is the importance of the neutralization of weak forms as a process in connected speech?
Well, I mean, it's really important to be able to produce wood forms in a way to sound natural, because I mean, it has to do with the fact that in English you don't accentuate functional words. Whereas, for example, in Spanish, you always accentuate the last bit in a sentence, as much as it's a weak form, it's repeated information,
yes.
And that doesn't occur in English. Then, in terms of simulation, there are obviously many cases, but I mentioned the ones in my work.
In terms of assimilation and illusion and linking, yes, most of them are described in terms of facilitating the production of the speaker or economy of effort in articulation. But weak form is the one process that is not described in terms of economy of effort, but in term it is message oriented rather than speaker oriented, because it plays a key role, yes. In the
some are completely different words, even if you produce it one strong.
Exactly, exactly.
Absolutely, yes.
In the production of that. What would you say about varieties of English and the units and varieties of English?
I think that's something very interesting to think about. I really got to think a lot about that. From the exercise that we did with you for something else, that was very interesting. And the categories of like English as a first language and English as a second language, English as a foreign language, which would be our case, people in Argentina learning English. They are kind of like the categories have been established, but I think that the category of English as lingua franca is very, very interesting to think about. English being used by non-native speakers, and I think that in terms of like a globalized world, it's very interesting to think about that and the role that they play, because it's a very great role.
Right. Well, I hope you keep up, yes, with all this interest. Yes.
And so I think I was like the chain, like I remember the beginning of the year, I was like, oh God, I'll never be able to like pull this out. I was like completely terrified of phonetics, because I mean the first month I was terrible.
But look, you've come a long way. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well done, Eugenia. Thank you very much.